Welcome to Writing Easy, a podcast about writing and ease. I am one of your hosts, Mary Mascari.
And I'm your other host, Melissa Long.
How'd you like that opening? Nailed it, huh?
Nailed it. Perfect 10.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So this is one of our off weeks. So one of the weeks that we talk about problems and troubles and things that we are struggling with. And I'm going to talk a bit today. I started starting a new project, and I was doing some work on it, and I kind of had a process this weekend that I wanted to kind of share with everybody.
Yay.
But although I have no shortage of problems, we'd love to do some of these about things you're working with. So let us know. Email us, tweet at us, Instagram us, smoke signals, carrier pigeon. We're the addresses are what you'd expect.
It's Writing Easy Podcast at all of the accounts.
At everything. It's always Writing Easy Podcast. So whatever it is, look for Writing Easy Podcast and you will find us and find some way to tell us what's going on. And, you know, we'd love to talk about it. But today we're going to talk about what I'm doing. So would you believe, Melissa, that I have decided to try writing a romance?
Yay! Love writing romances.
I've never done that before. But I figured, you know what? Let's have a little fun. I was talking about rom-coms. I'm like, well, you know, I really do like rom-coms. Those are fun. And the literary version of that is a romance. So I thought I'd write one. And I kind of thought I'd talk about what I've been doing the last couple days to kind of prep for this. And you could let me know if there's anything I'm doing that seems bad or good or whatever. So I started off with, obviously, my two characters. I have not yet determined my characters' names or their genders. One is going to be a professor. One's going to be a DJ. It's going to be on a college campus, small town. So I'm going to call them professor and DJ and try to use they pronouns because I honestly don't know yet. I haven't decided. But those are my couple, and I needed them to need something. I wanted them both to have something that they're after. And the way, as I understand, and you probably have more experience with romance than I do, is that there's kind of a yin and yang that happens, right? So one half of the couple has a need or like who they really are and then who they pretend to be, sort of, who they think they are. And then the other person is kind of backwards. And so where I am weak, they are strong. Where they are weak, I am strong. And they fit together really nicely and it all goes really well. So I was like, okay, well, what's that going to be? How are we going to do this? The professor has a little bit of like a abandonment fear. Fear mm-hmm. of abandonment? What's that called?
Fear of abandonment.
Oh.
I'm a writer.
Well, we use the fancy terms. And so I was like, well, let's see. Their dad died. Their mom buried herself in work. And so they're really feeling lonely. And so they tend to find a partner and just kind of attach to them. Maybe longer than they should. But really, what they'll be when they're really fully realized, fully actuated, is someone who's going to be very active, who's going to be decisive and in charge, and who's going to be willing to fight for what they believe in. And what I did is, have you ever heard of Enneagrams?
Mm-hmm.
They're a personality type model. And I picked one for the professor. And it's kind of nice because it talks about character growth and stuff. I kind of picked that for them. And then I've got my DJ who was kind of a failure in school. And so they're kind of a emotional artsy sort of person, you know, rebelling against the school that they never were successful in. So we've got a smarty brainy person and we've got non-schooly rebelly person.
Yep.
That's really nice. But what are we trying to do here? And so I needed a MacGuffin. And in case you're not familiar, a MacGuffin is the thing that everyone wants. Is that, yes. That's a pretty common term, don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, I don't hear it often outside of writing in literary circles, but...
Yeah. I remember a Phineas and Ferb where she had a Mary MacGuffin doll that they were all after, but I think that was just an inside joke.
That's great.
So I was doing some research, and I actually found this quote that, you know, Alfred Hitchcock was the one who coined that term. He said, oh, it's a MacGuffin. He had this joke that he talked about it. It's very strange. So there's these two guys on a train, and one guy has something of a strange apparatus, and the other guy says, well, what the heck is that? And the first guy goes, oh, it's for trapping lions in the Scottish Highlands. And that guy says, no, lions in the Scottish Highlands? And then one says, well, that's no MacGuffin. And then Alfred Hitchcock goes, so you see that a MacGuffin is actually nothing at all. That was not helpful at all. That doesn't make any goddamn bit of sense. So I found a little better way where they talked about, it's like this, where a guy's saying, oh, I've got a crate with breathing holes in it. And one guy says, oh, what's in there? And the guy says, oh, it's a mongoose. Is my friend, when he gets drunk, he starts seeing snakes everywhere. So this is a mongoose to kill them. The first guy goes, says, well, those snakes are, they're imaginary. And the guy says, well, so is the mongoose. So that works out. You know, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes a little more sense. But according to Hitchcock, a MacGuffin is nothing, but it's also what everyone's after. So that was not helpful. Do you ever think about using MacGuffins yourself, she says, taking a break so that she's not talking all the time?
I'm trying to think if I've used them in my novels. I've seen them done really well, and I think they're very common in romance because there's often something that both partners want, and it's the same thing. So they're in direct competition, and they do that so that the relationship has conflict, right? There's like these obstacles that are in direct conflict and keeping them from coming together. I tend to write more like paranormal romance and urban fantasy, which is a little bit different in that, like, you don't have to have the happily ever after in those. And so usually the thing that they're doing is more survival based, in terms of they're avoiding the zombie, or they're avoiding the thing, but that's their common sort of thing that is threatening the relationship.
MacGuffin is my head, and I would like it to stay on my shoulders. They want to not. So yeah, that's a little different. But yeah, so I was like, well, yeah, they need to have something, right? Because otherwise it's a real short romance story.
Right.
Like, oh, I like you. I like you too. Hey, let's go out. Sounds good. So I was like, okay, well, they need something that they need to do. I know that they both are going to make this journey from inaction to action. And I was like, okay, that there needs to be some sort of cause then, right? That sounds like it's a cause, something that they're going to both take on and fight together. And I could not think of anything, right? So I went to Hitchcock, and he was like, it's nothing. And other people say, oh, in Pulp Fiction, the suitcase. No one ever knew what it was. I'm like, okay, well, that, again, this does not help me a bit. So I had to think about the character work I'd just done. You know, I have these two characters. I have their wants and their needs, you know, in a very high level way. And I use those to kind of point me in a direction to say, all right, well, what would someone who's, you know, maybe an overthinker, an intellectual, and yet also a fear of abandonment want? And then also someone who's kind of a overdramatic, melancholic, bohemian person also want for something different. And it's in a college town, so it's in a college campus. I'm like, well, what's on a college campus? A lot of times college campuses have new buildings, right? So there'll be someone that'll sponsor it, and they'll put a new building. And I just sort of did some nosing around different college websites and saw that, like, not all colleges have like a med school. They might have a pre-med school, but no actual med school. I was like, well, okay, wouldn't it be interesting if this school wanted to build a building to try to get a med school, right? So now the college has a thing they want to do, and these guys are going to take different sides. And I decided that Professors X wants the building to be built. So they go to them and say, hey, I need your help. And they want to get their ex back. See, that's the problem with the gender-neutral pronouns, is it gets a little confusing. I'm going to have to use, like, actual proper. So Professor and Professor's ex. Not to be confused with Professor X, because this is not an X-Men story.
I'm following. All right.
Yeah, I'm so glad, because I feel like I'm just rambling crazy. I'm going to edit this down to 2 minutes. So Professor and Professor's ex. Professor's ex wants the thing, and Professor wants to get their ex back, so they're going to, like, we'll try to impress them. So it's like, oh, I want to get back with you. I'll do what you want. Great. So that way I've got them to be in opposite sides without the professor having a wildly different point of view on this, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that they're against, you know, they want the building so much as they just want the ex to be happy with it. Yeah. So, you know, that kind of comes at it from a different way. And then I said, well, okay, well, why wouldn't you want to build a building? What causes do I find important? Well, I'm pretty big into the environment right now. Let's make it an environmental issue. So now I have something concrete to work with, right? I have this building. I have the relationship. I have the ex that the professor wants to get with. And then I've got the DJ who's going to fight to keep the building. The DJ also has a pulpit, right? Mm-hmm. Being on the radio can, if students listen to radios anymore, can talk to the student body, can talk to the community, can get them riled up. And so now I have a conflict, right? Because now I've got, and as soon as I did that, scenes started coming to me. So, you know, that was how I did it. And I, what I had to do is figure out who the people were first. And those Enneagrams are a great model for that. And then with that, I had to think about what would someone like that want? What would someone like that be after? And then I was able to use that helped point me to a MacGuffin that I think is going to give me something that I can work with. How's that sound? Do you think that works okay?
I think it works. I think, you know, the one thing about the MacGuffins and the things, the prize, is that you always have to figure out, like, the character thinks that they need that, right? Like, that's the thing that they are pursuing through Act 1 and usually most of Act 2, and they get to Act 3 and they're like, oh, like, this isn't actually what I need or want, and it's this other thing. So that, I mean, I guess that's the other piece is, like, is it that they just reverse sides because they realize that they don't need it and want it?
Yeah. I don't know that part yet.
Yeah.
I think for the professor, it's pretty easy, right? Because what they want is their ex. We know that the ex is not the right person for them. I mean, obviously, this is not their romance. So no, there's no romance stories about getting together with your ex, right? That doesn't happen. Well, maybe there are. But this is not it. Like, you'll know that, like, that, you know, it's the professor and the DJ are the ones we're going to get together. So, yeah, the professor's going to realize that their ex is not the person, not what they're after. And I think the DJ is going to rile things up just to rile things up a little bit more than necessary. And things are going to get out of hand. Because we've got a bunch of students, too, right? So it's like they have a lot of free time.
They have too much free time. Well, I like it. I think that, you know what, the other thing that I love about romance, and I mean, there's all different subgenres of romance, right? So I talked about the paranormal, you know, there's the romantic suspense, there's the rom-coms and the light, sort of lighthearted.
Yeah, sweet romance, and inspirational romance,
spicy,
historical romance.
So all different flavors, right?
Wow.
I love playing with, like, how you develop the relationship over the course of the novel. And for me, that was sort of the hardest thing to master, because I think it's easy to come up with scenes, but it's like, oh, I have to come up with scenes where these two emotionally connect and that the audience believes that, and that it gets more intense and you're building that sort of chemistry over a significant period of time. And it's – or a very condensed period of time.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to be coming back to this podcast and talking more through this, which I think is kind of cool. Maybe this will be, you know, we'll have this running thing of Mary's writing a book and we'll talk about what I do to do it and what sucks and what doesn't. Because personally, I would love to hear about that for other people. It's like, how do you do it? So maybe that's what we'll do. I'll keep sharing it.
Mm-hmm. You'll have to dedicate the book to the audience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, absolutely.
They may petition for 5%.
Yeah. Well, you know, that might not amount to very much, so we'll see.
What if they want, like, a byline? It would be like Mary Mascari and the Writing Easy podcast listeners.
Excellent. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to work that out in the contract negotiations. But I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be a good thing to do. Well, that's all I have for today. Oh, yeah. Oh, except we didn't do the quote.
Oh, we did not. Let's do that.
I was so excited to talk about my thing.
We have a good quote. The quote was from Anne Handley, and it was, "Assume the reader knows nothing, but don't assume the reader is stupid."
Oh, that's
so powerful.
Like, you have to explain stuff, but yeah, don't think that they won't figure stuff out. You got to respect them.
I mean, I feel like this is what the revision process is all about for me, because you never know, like, am I giving too much away? Is it too obvious?
Yes.
Or is it, like, so, like, convoluted that nobody has any idea what I'm talking about?
That's what I tend to do. I always assume that, particularly if it's historical, I assume that everyone who's reading is an expert on that time period, mm-hmm. which scares me, right? So I do that to like, well, make sure I got everything right because I know they'll come after me. But the thing is that most people aren't an expert in that time period. And so I often get the feedback of like, what the hell is this? Like, oh, you know, obviously it's the, you don't know about like, oh, let me explain it then, you know? So that's a, it's a tricky balance, but I think that's where getting people to read your stuff is really helpful.
And I do think like once you start building a brand and an audience and you kind of know your readership, you have a sense of yeah. how much detail you need to put into a story, right? Are they coming to your work because they expect you to be this hard science fiction person that has a ton of scientific knowledge built into their stories? Then like, yeah, you better bring it. Like they're going to expect that.
Yeah. Or, you know, just to understand, yeah, what style are we going for? Where are you? It can be a difficult line to walk sometimes, I think.
I think the other thing is this don't assume your audience is stupid piece. I've heard other authors say things like, oh, well, this character was too stupid to live. Because they mm-hmm. they make these decisions that in real life, like you just wouldn't make. You're like, okay, this is a 36-year-old woman with a career and a da 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 da, and she does this, or like she can't make yeah. the connection that like these three things are going to happen as a result. And so those are the other things that sometimes you get really excited as a writer and you're like, oh, this is the perfect thing. And like, I'm done. And they're like, no, they would never do that.
I found that usually too stupid to live means I haven't explained well enough what, you know, why this is happening. You know, I haven't shown the motivation mm-hmm. clearly enough. And so you assume, boy, that's really dumb. You know, because if you think about it in real life, that happens, right? Yeah. Like you're driving behind someone and they're like, they're driving really bad. You're like, what the hell is wrong with you? You moron. You know, and then you pass and you go, oh, I see, you know, they're a really old person or, you know, or something. You go, oh, okay. I guess you weren't stupid. There was a real reason. Which is usually the case. But if you haven't given the reader that information, they're going to be like, this guy's an idiot. Not yeah. you, the writer, but the character.
Exactly. And maybe the writer, depending.
Well, I'm not going to make any promises for myself, that's for sure.
I think a really good example is the 50 Shades of Grey books. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of, like, we could do a whole episode on all of the things. God. But the storyline in the third book and movie, because it's consistent, is that like mm-hmm. they get married and it's very weird because they get married and then they have a conversation about kids like 3 weeks yeah. later. And it's kind of like, okay, you've known this person for like 6 weeks, maybe. You got married to yeah. them. You never had a conversation about kids or your future. And yet you said yes. Yeah. Like, there are things like that where you're like, ooh, and now I'm questioning the writer, too, because that seems weird.
There's a lot of question there. And that book was not about literary skill or character development. And it was about, oh boy, butts. That's what that
was about. Cold, hard cash.
Well, I think it was about a lot of people not feeling like they can consume something like that. You know, yeah. like. I think it's particularly a lot of women don't feel like, oh, I can go read an erotic book. Whereas you totally can. And there's so many that are better than just buy them. It's fine. Put on your Kindle. No one knows. You know, they don't feel like that's okay. And what I think 50 Shades of Grey did is it made it okay. It made porn for women to be acceptable. And so women who were dying for that jumped on it.
Yep. But, maybe.
And, you know, if that means that erotica becomes a little more mainstream, a little more acceptable, well, and I guess I will forgive the terrible writing. You know, if it means that more people feel like, hey, yeah, I'm going to consume this porn book. I'm going to read it because this is what I like. It gets me off. I guess that's a good thing.
I think we should do an episode on these popular sort of like taboo stories mm-hmm. because I don't have a problem with it. I know some people are like, oh, I can't stand this book, or I can't stand Twilight, or blah, blah, it's so bad. And yet I'm like, millions of people read it. Like, so there must yeah. be some value to it. And I'm always intrigued by what it says about us as a society and the impact that it can have, regardless of the quality of writing.
And I think it's good to know that everything is so subjective, because there's a lot of things that people love that I just like, nah, yep. like, Game of Thrones, I got through 2.5 books and I was like, I do not care. It just didn't hook me. Whereas I had friends who were like, this is everything. Oh, look, the power's going down. Okay. Oh, no, we're good. All right. Maybe we should wrap up, though.
That's
before,
a sign.
Yeah, because it's getting dark. So I think we've covered everything. And next week we'll have some more in-depth stuff, provided I haven't blown away to Oz.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'll pretty much do it for this week. What do you think?
I think we're good. I think you should just be prepared to record, though. Like, if you do get blown away to Oz, like, we would love that footage.
I will bring my phone with me and
we'll put it on our Instagram stories.
Absolutely. Cool. Hashtag Lollipop Guild. All right. Well, I think we should wrap up by saying our super cheesy catchphrase, writing is hard.
So take it easy.
You gotta work that. I have been Mary Mascarenhas.
And I'm Melissa Long. Bye, all.
Bye, everybody. See you.